Don Draper is the protagonist of a new drama on AMC called Mad Men, and this dapper character in the custom-made suit appears to have it made. The year is 1960, and as the creative director of a high-powered Madison Avenue ad agency, Draper, a classically handsome man with a chiseled chin and slick black hair, inhabits a world where lighting up a smoke or pouring a drink in the office is just part of doing business. The wives are at home with the kids. Women in the office are secretaries or sex objects, sometimes both. Draper has a mistress, but in the series he also hits on a client who says she never married because she never fell in love.
What do you mean love? You mean a big lightning bolt to the heart where you can't eat and you can't work and you just run off and get married and make babies. The reason you haven't felt it is because it doesn't exist. What you call love was invented by guys like me to sell nylons.
That's the actor John Hamm as Don Draper, the main character in the new original drama series Mad Men on AMC. Matthew Weiner is the creator and executive producer of the series, and he joins us. Thanks for your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Give us the definition of Mad Men.
It was supposedly a phrase coined to describe the executives in the late 50s of Madison Avenue who worked in advertising. They called themselves Mad Men. So it was a great title and a great piece of self-promotion that showed who they were.
This is the time when advertising was really ramping up as a medium, and it's an interesting world. What is it about it that compelled you to create a series about it?
Well, I was interested in where we are now, and I'm fascinated by advertising, as are a lot of creative people and a lot of people in general. When it's good, it's so entertaining. And when I started realizing what these men did and what their contribution was and where they were in New York, that they were these rock stars. And also, I work in television, and it's a very similar world. Mm. It's a world of ego, and creative people can't be pushed too hard, so they're given a lot of leeway. They're allowed to drink, and they're allowed to come in late, and they're allowed to be mean to their bosses, you know? So I loved all that.
1960 was also a watershed year. It's sort of great wall that came down in culture, certainly American culture. Why did you want to set this series in 1960?
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I don't know that it was really recognized as that. I think when I looked at 1960, it was a watershed year. It was the height of the 50s. There was a lot of counterculture, a lot of subversion, as the election revealed. Subversion in the sense that people were not taking the American dream for granted. There was so much prosperity that people started thinking about other needs in their lives. And you heard people talking about intolerance and banning the bomb. And, you know, the election was that close. So that, in addition to the fact that the pill came out then, a lot of women flocked to New York just to get into the secretarial pool, but certainly there was an influx of women into the workforce, even at a low level. Also, I think that a big change really was happening, and I don't know how to describe what made it take place, but there is definitely a before and after 1960.
One constant, I think, in any story that's being told about any decade is the dynamic between men and women. I mean, you can look at it any different number of ways that it's presented in this series. I mean, because it is this netherworld between
right.
The bohemian below 14th Street and, you know, the office manager, the wife with the puff skirt, the woman who's trying to own her father's department store, the new...
Right.
I mean, it's like these archetypes.
That's, yeah.
Bullet bras and birth control pills. What are you saying about what these women that you've created want?
I do believe that sexist behavior, although it's unconscionable in the office place, you should be sued, it does not belong in domestic situations, I do believe that it is the biological basis of sexual attraction, and that I try to keep alive in there somehow. You know, Pete Campbell tells this story to Peggy about hunting and this
yes.
fantasy about going into this cabin and seeing this woman there after he's killed this animal.
And I'd go into the cabin, and there'd be this woman waiting for me, standing by one of those old stoves with a big black pipe. And I'd hand it to her, and she'd put it in a cast iron skillet. And then I'd sit at the table, and she'd bring it to me. And I'd wipe my knife on my knee. And then I would eat it while she watches.
That would be wonderful.
women love men because they kill things.
Yes, and she just listens with her, you know, little mouse ears, and she breathes, and, you know, she's the new girl who comes into the office pool and so forth. Can I ask you a question? Is it my imagination, or do her bullet bras get bigger underneath her sweaters as the series goes on for 7 episodes?
There is no imagination necessary. There is something physically happening to her, and it is happening upstairs.
One of the great artifacts you have throughout this are the ashtrays that everybody uses, because everybody's smoking all the time. I have to ask, what kind of deal did you have to make with the actors to get them to smoke so much?
Well, they smoke herbal cigarettes, and quite honestly, I don't let actors who have never smoked or who don't smoke smoke, mostly because they don't look good doing it. And then the other thing is that actors love smoking in scenes the same way they love eating in scenes, because the most difficult thing, and you can ask this from Jack Nicholson down to someone doing a sit and sleep commercial, the most difficult thing to deal with is your hands. And the minute you have a piece of business, and I write a lot of business because it's my actors are great actors and they want to do the stuff and they can. So that business of smoking is actually can be used for punctuation, for emphasis. In the pilot, Rachel Menken, when she's done with the meeting, she takes her cigarette and stubs it out in the shrimp cocktail that they provide for her, not realizing that she may not eat that.
Yes, yes.
You were right, Roger. This place really runs on charm.
This is ridiculous.
Don.
I'm not going to let a woman talk to me like this. This meeting is over. Good luck, Miss Menken.
Smoking is rampant in this series, and at one point the ad agency is charged with the account of a tobacco company that needs to market cigarettes again, and they are able to market it on the line, "It's toasted."
Yes. The smoking is somehow alarming to people, and they think it's somehow historically inaccurate or that I'm doing it for effect. And what they don't realize is people used to go to the doctor and measure their smoking in packs of cigarettes. This is not excessive. And there are people who don't smoke, but people who smoked, smoked all the time. They smoked everywhere. I was born in 1965, and I grew up with the smoker, and I am completely speaking from experience. And in terms of their interest in the consumer culture, what's kind of interesting about what I'm saying about advertising, I think, and I'm not trying to educate the public about advertising, I'm trying to educate them about the fact that their wishes and desires are what make them buy things. And that sometimes the strictness of a campaign, that Don is smart enough to realize that the qualities of the product are completely unrelated to the product. If something is dangerous, the answer is don't think about it. And that is how Don lives. He could have taken the route of doing the death wish, which I think on some level is what Marlboro did with this cowboy who was, you know, I'm so tough, cigarettes can't kill me, and going to Marlboro country. What is that? That is definitely a cemetery of some kind. And Don says, no, I'm interested in making people feel good about themselves. And so it is a ostrich-like behavior, but it is the root of it is another sales technique, and it, in the end, it tells us a lot about Don.
We see Don in his home actually ignoring the danger that lurks. It's a domestic scene, and one of Draper's children comes into the room, and she's wearing a plastic dry cleaning bag over her head. And Mom, Betts, gets upset, and it's not because her daughter might suffocate, which is what we look at through our eyes, but basically we have the scene. Let's hear it.
Okay.
Sally Draper, come over here this minute. If the clothes from that dry cleaning bag are on the floor of my closet, you're going to be a very sorry young lady.
She runs bed. You know, we'll find her on the floor of the bedroom.
Listen, we grew up without car seats and all these things, and it is not, I don't know, I have 4 children, and I just think we are too protective of them on some level. But I just wanted to show the fact that this is definitely, I remember that.
It's an interesting route to tap, because even in 1960, there was a certain fatalism about the burgeoning, the nuclear age.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I think that entrance into the modern age of fear on some level, which is one of the things that comes when you're not worrying about your everyday existence, when you're not worrying, when there is prosperity, other things come into play. What am I here for?
Matthew Weiner is the executive producer and creator of the AMC original series Mad Men. A marathon of episodes is being broadcast this weekend. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.
Weekend Edition Sunday is a production of NPR News, which is solely responsible for its content. You can purchase transcripts of stories you hear on this program. Visit our website, npr.org, and click on Transcripts at the top of the page. To find out about the movies you hear on NPR programs, go to npr.org/movies. This is NPR.